Yes, it is. As we head into hour two, it is a delight to welcome back as a guest, because he is sometimes a guest host, but as a guest representing Arizona 6th Congressional District, Representative David Schweikert. David, how are you, sir?
You know, every time you say that, it proves you'll just let anyone host there.
Not true. Not true. There are a strict series of criteria we go through very meticulously, and you just made it through. You did.
You made it through. Promise I will show up on time.
You made it through. When I got when I didn't get the top score on my bar exam, someone said to me, you know what they call the guy who got the worst score on the bar exam? A lawyer.
Yes, and probably my lawyer.
David.
I'm sorry. I understand, but I have said such crappy luck with
I understand. I understand.
Yeah, I'm a bit cynical there.
You actually may have bad luck, but you have great fortune. And I was looking at what you were doing on Twitter today. You rebroadcast a speech that you delivered earlier this year because today kind of demands it. You want to say what you said in that speech?
I have no idea which speech.
You really don't. It was about how fortunate you were to have been adopted.
Oh,
and how
yes.
your life was saved
so
when
sorry.
Your birth mother chose
I've been
life.
I've been buried in budget stuff.
Well, I'll take moment. Either. I'll take
but
either.
Look, I'm incredibly blessed. I was born in an unwed mother's home in L.A. and adopted, and then actually got adopted again. And Father Schweikert was on his heading out to Arizona, and got to grow up, you know, in the valley. And imagine this: imagine being in your 30s, late 30s, and you go into work and you turn on your computer, and there's an email there from someone you've never met saying, "Hi there, hey, your little sister gave me some information. Here's your birth mother's name and address
wow.
and phone number."
Wow. Wow.
What do you do?
Yeah.
And I reached out and sent a very carefully worded handwritten note because I didn't know if she ever told her family.
What are you doing at this point in your life? Where are you in life when this comes to you? It's pre-elected office, I assume, or is it?
I don't think I was in elected
yeah,
office.
Yeah, okay.
I was running people's investments and doing things like that, I believe.
Okay.
So life was pretty good. And all I wanted to do is say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 weeks went by. So I just figured, ooh, she didn't. And then I get this call, and it's this little voice just crying, saying, "I pray for you every day. Are you healthy? Are you happy?" And I'm crying on the other end saying, "I've had a great life. Thank you for giving me life." And the next weekend, drove out to California, met her, met the family. And guess what? This weekend, my little adopted daughter and myself, we spent time with my 2 6-foot-tall, blonde half-sisters.
Wow.
For my birth mom. And we've been doing that every year ever since. And it's just wonderful. I mean, so my little girl is the third generation adopted.
Wow.
So we're a little sensitive on this subject.
Well, I guess that you have the right to be. I was reading to the audience earlier, David, so far as I know, there's only one president who actually wrote a book while in office, and that president was Ronald Reagan. The title of that book was Abortion and the Conscience of a Nation. He chose a single issue to write his book on. This is how near and dear the issue was to his heart. And he made the point in there that this line, every child a wanted child, he said it no longer works anymore. And he quoted Mother Teresa, and he says, if anyone doesn't want a child, we'll take them. Give me that child. Oh. We will love that child.
Well,
there are no such
what,
thing as unwanted
you know what
children anymore.
I went through trying to adopt.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, my wife had been very, you know, had some real health issues when we got married. And, you know, we did everything we could and then spent a decade trying to adopt.
Mm-hmm.
And we got incredibly lucky. But how many couples do you know that have been trying to
pulling their hair out.
Child.
Yeah, no, that and the foster care system, I would love to do tremendous reform on, you know?
There is a policy discussion of, you know, 30 years ago, we raised parental rights to the absolute, and you're
right.
The lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's time to have a little consideration of, you know, what are the child's
yeah.
future and
right. rights? Right. Right.
Because I believe most adoptions in Arizona now come through the foster care system.
Interesting. Yeah. But boy, I'll tell you, whenever you talk to a foster parent, they will tell you, you know, versions of what you said, which is how hard it is to even adopt, much less become, you know, foster parent. And this notion that children are unwanted is baloney. It's just baloney. We've created a system that makes it harder for the wanted to get them, but there is no child that's unwanted, not in this world.
And you have to sort of think, what is the judgment of a society?
Yep.
You know, on how we treat, shall we say, the least among us.
Yep.
And, you know, think of the love and heart pouring there'd be if a puppy's being hurt.
Yep.
And yet, do we feel the same for a preborn child?
We don't. We don't. And part of it is psycholinguistic. You know, Jesse Jackson wrote before he changed his mind for political purposes, but in the 1977, he wrote an article for the Human Life Review saying the way we can engage in abortion without a pang of conscience is by the same token we engaged in slavery. You give the human being a different name.
Yeah.
We used the N-word in the past to dehumanize the black person so that we could do whatever we wanted with him. Here we give this child, this unborn human being, he said, the name fetus. Thus, we can do this without pangs of conscience. This is the weaponization of language we live with.
Now, I'm also a believer that ultimately it's a subject we have to win by love, by conscience,
mm-hmm.
by caring,
mm-hmm.
by telling our stories, because for the society to come together on life, it has to be because of a collective sort of understanding of the morality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's the only way we're going to. And I agree with you on that. And I think it starts with lowering the hysteria at every level, you know, our side, their side, and having these kinds of calm decisions and walking people through it, because they really don't know. They really don't know this issue. I heard no one less than Neil Cavuto on Fox News, you know, a longtime journalist, say today if Roe versus Wade is overturned, abortion will be illegal in this country. It's not true. It's just not true.
No.
It wasn't illegal
and
in this country before Roe versus
Roe v. Wade.
There
were states like California and others.
Right.
That, you know, so, but that's part of.
It's part of the unwinding you and I have to engage in, part of the.
Yeah,
right?
and we have to also deal with one other brutality. There's an entire fundraising money, political power industry out there based around the issue, particularly on the left.
Yep.
The left uses this to fill their fundraising coffers. And that's why, like today, there's only basically a member, a single Democrat member in all the U.S. Congress who you might consider pro-life.
Is that right? I did not realize
single
that.
One.
Is that
They've
right?
wiped them out. And it's because it is the key to their fundraising. It's a key sort of litmus test.
Boy, this just wasn't true of the old Democratic Party that I grew up with. George McGovern was pro-life. Hubert Humphrey was pro-life. Jimmy Carter was more pro-life than Gerald Ford.
Even a decade ago.
Yeah, even a decade ago.
There was still a number. And I think for many, if you take a step backwards and see what's happened in our society. And then you have the weird stuff that you and I get into where you put on your math cap and sort of move a little way from your heart and your conscience and say, what happens in a society where our fertility rates have collapsed?
Yep.
What happens to a society as we get really old?
Yep.
And that's happening to us right now.
Yep. Yep.
We're about to pay a massive economic price. And people don't realize your retirement, your ability 10, 20 years from now to be getting your Social Security check and your Medicare check, we've screwed up our nation's demographics.
Oh, yeah, no. It requires a workforce that has yet to be born.
Well, it sounds more like an accountant, but there's a reason societies have a certain structure.
Yeah, it's why they organize themselves around honoring and esteeming and protecting life.
Life.
It really is.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
So sometimes if you can't talk to the heart, you can actually talk to the mind.
Nicely put. David Schweikert. Nicely put. Well, let's do some of the math next time. I think we leave it right here for today. I think this is just a beautiful way to end this segment, if you don't mind. Is that okay with you?
Oh, I'd love to.
I can't improve on
it. One day in the future, I need to tell you some of the final stories of my birth mother.
I would love to.
It'll make you cry.
Well, come on in. We have room for you here. I'd like to do an hour with you. And in the meantime, let me just say God bless your mom, and God bless your mom, and God bless your family.
All right. Have a wonderful day.
You too, David. Thank
okay.
you.
Bye
bless
now.
You, sir. I'm Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960. We will be right back. Interesting year, 1982. Is it a better year than 2021? I don't know. This was the year that was supposed to be the healing year from the and fractious and tortuous and torturous 2020, as we're now in December. Was that kind of year for you? Was it a calming year? Was it a year where you could keep calm and or maintain calm or reclaim calm and carry on? You saw a lot of those bumper stickers, didn't you? I mentioned that earlier, the refrigerator magnets, keep calm and carry on, the old British statement from just before World War II broke out. And 1939, so Britain was already in it, but we weren't. And you just wonder, is it all for nothing? Do they mean it? Do people with their bumper stickers and their slogans mean what they say, or are they merely aspirational, or are they a cudgel? Keep calm and carry on. Nothing about the Democratic Party, nothing about the left, nothing about the liberal and their prescriptions. And their warnings is about calm and carrying on. It's about panic. It's about crisis. And it's about fundamental transformation, if not revolution. Jean Shaheen recommended revolution. Democratic senator from New Hampshire. Amy, Stacey Abrams, I see, is running for governor again in Georgia, which will be interesting for the commentariat and the journalists covering her to see how many times she claims the current governor is illegitimate. She has been claiming that up until yesterday for the last several years, that he was fraudulently elected. I thought that was supposed to be what was known as a big lie. I thought questioning the accuracy and the validity of an election was supposed to be a big lie. It's not. It's not. It's only a big lie when a Republican does it. Only then. It wasn't a big lie when Nancy Pelosi did it with Donald Trump. It wasn't a big lie when Hillary Clinton continued to do it throughout the Trump presidency. And it wasn't a big lie when Stacey Abrams continued to do it, even as she was campaigning for others in places like Virginia. Quad licit, jovi, non-licit, bovi. Doug is in Maricopa. Hello, Doug.
Well, hi there, Seth.
How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and my afternoon, no matter how good, always goes better when I listen in.
You're very kind.
Gain knowledge and wisdom.
You're very kind.
I have a story, true story, and there was a woman who in her youth was, you know, perhaps a little too wild, but basically a pretty decent person. She did, on one sad day, end up getting into a situation where she got raped. Terrible tragedy, raped and abused. And as luck would have it, she ended up becoming pregnant because of that rape, mm-hmm. even though it was quite violent. And she chose, did something that I find more courageous than just about anything I've seen of any person in my many long years, is that she chose life and not to kill the child.
Mm-hmm.
And which I find to be very incredible, because oftentimes
I can't even begin to imagine. I'm with you. And
no.
Yeah, I have a similar story, but keep going. I can't even begin to imagine. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We can't, you know. At the height of our pain, where most people are so wrapped up in the pain,
yeah.
they want the pain to end. The idea
yeah.
that life would be so treasured
yeah.
that it would trump all of our personal pain mm. is a morality that is just almost bordering on sainthood.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. It's a morality hardly to be expected of anyone, really.
Right. Well, this child grew up, kind of rebelled because he didn't have a father, became kind of wild, but then turned his life around, stopped drinking and partying and everything else, and put himself through medical school, and ended up, beginning his own practice. But before he began his practice, he met a very fine girl, just happened to be my daughter. And they got married, and as my son-in-law, one of the finest gentlemen I've ever met, and become very much like my son, and is also a business partner. And the idea that his worth is based on a person's feelings, or is his worth based on an intrinsic value to God? And I just look at him and I say, what if someone else had choose to try to end their pain versus giving this incredible soul a chance on this earth? So for me, it's very personal. I can't, matter of fact, I normally don't quote movies, but there's a great line from Rob Roy when his wife was raped by the British, and she was pregnant and didn't know who the father was. And she said, and I can't kill it. It's alive. And he said, oh, honey, it's not the baby that needs killing. Mm-hmm. Now, that's cruel. It's kind of cold, but it was said in the context that you don't take out your harm on the baby.
Yeah.
The baby is an intrinsic gift from God. And he's an innocent in all the violence and all the pain. There is something so innocent and so beautiful that I think we should treasure it under all circumstances. But to me, that's one of the most beautiful stories. And having lived it, I can't imagine that this young man would not be in our life and that we would be deprived, that gift to our family.
And that thought is something I was exploring in a slightly different context. It was in the context of World War II, believe it or not, with some friends at lunch. And we were talking about the exponential loss we will never be able to comprehend or ever get the factual basis and history of for anyone who is, anyone who is unjustly killed, anyone. You think about the exponential loss of the next person who might just have gone on to find a cure for, you name it, who might just have gone on to put his life in front of a car for an older or more feeble person. The exponential cost of these things is misunderstood to the degree we diminish life itself. I had an emailer saying, why is it easier to get an abortion than to adopt a child? That's a perversion of justice.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. It's because we don't.
It's what we value. It's what we value.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you for that story, Doug. I really do. I don't know. The English language needs a better word than thank you. I mean it almost every time I say it sincerely, but, it does suffer from certain syntactical saturation. I don't know. Maybe we can do it in other languages, but then it sounds insincere. Let's just go back to the sincerity of meaning what we say and saying what we mean. Thank you, Doug. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. A couple things. One we talked about yesterday, and the other I should have mentioned yesterday. Pennsylvania, things are looking up for Pennsylvania, a new entrant into the race for U.S. Senate there, Republican Dr. Oz, Mehmet Oz. Certainly you've seen him on television. Certainly you've heard him in other contexts. There's like five or six people I think have been referred to various decades, various times as America's doctor. Mehmet Oz certainly would have been one of those at one of those points, trusted commentator and speaker and medical professional, cardiothoracic surgery, I think, is his expertise is his specialty. Anyway, running for Senate in Pennsylvania. We'll watch that. And as far as I can tell, this is welcome news. He's saying all the right things. And, you know, this is something we're going to need to focus on as Americans. I was going to say as Republicans, but as an American, more than as a Republican, the import of putting people in office who actually have some degree of expertise in talking about things that affect and afflict all of us, though we don't have expertise in them. How many of us have been forced to roll up our sleeves and understand things only at least to our satisfaction or predilection or predilectory satisfaction on any number of things, only to realize we may have been very, 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 very wrong? COVID is a great example of it. It's amazing when you go back and think on some of the history of it. What are we into it? 20 months, 21 months now? How much we were all craving information. And some of the demand, outpaced the supply. But a lot of the supply was not responsive to the demand, and a lot of the supply was wrong. And a lot of what we taught ourselves and what we discovered and thought we knew and convinced ourselves of was wrong. And it still happens. It still is. I am amazed. I don't know how we do this. I literally don't know how we do this. We go from a headline in the New York Times yesterday, "Will the vaccines stop Omicron? Scientists are racing to find out." We don't know. We don't know. In fact, Anthony Fauci 2 days ago, Sunday, said we don't know. And today, the president and Anthony Fauci are saying vaccines and then boosters on them will stop it. It's the only way out. It had me asking the question of the audience earlier. I'm still interested. Do you think your government is telling you the truth? Do you think they're lying to you, or do you think they're making it up as they go along? Someone said, well, those categories are pretty strict. Isn't there room for doing their best? Sure there is. Tell us that. Because when we had a different president a year ago, we had the current president campaigning against him, saying, "I won't shut the country down, I'll shut COVID down." And anyone with 220,000 deaths on their hands is simply unfit to be president. That's what the current president was saying a year ago about the last president. And, well, we've surpassed more than 220,000 deaths on this president's watch. I don't think he is seeking resignation. I don't think he is seeking his own impeachment, all of which I don't know that we should be seeking. The alternative, let me remind you, is someone I think far more dangerous than Joe Biden, and that's Kamala Harris. I think she's far more dangerous because, unlike him, I don't think Well, let me put it in the positive. Unlike him, I think she has her wits about her. I just think there aren't that many of them. But I think she's fully cognizant, and I think she's fully in control of her thinking faculties. It's just that those faculties are wrong and rotten. And I don't think up to the task of vice presidency, much less presidency. So what are the Democrats talking about? Well, what do we do with a problem like Kamala? Because when she does do media, she embarrasses the administration. What do we do with a problem like Kamala? Well, you've given her the second most important job, perhaps, in the world. Where do you put her? What would be a lateral move? There are very few. So they're talking about the Supreme Court. That's the serious talk. Can we put Kamala Harris on the Supreme Court? Is that where you want her? Is that the better alternative? Think about the choices we have right now. In the meantime, look up the word Hobson's choice. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. That question I was asking about the government, are they telling you the truth? Are they lying to you? Excuse me, or are they making it up? as they go along, can also be asked of the media. And this Chris Cuomo case, it may have exponential issues. As you know, I think you know, he was suspended indefinitely from CNN yesterday. I'll be surprised if that isn't an actual process to end his contract amicably. I don't think he'll be coming back on CNN. That suspend indefinitely is code word for wishing him well on his future endeavors. I don't know what they could possibly be. I don't know who would want to pick him up. I think his career in journalism might very well be over. Then again, it may have never really commenced if you take the word journalism seriously. But it's going to have some aftershocks, this little bit of an earthquake in journalism and government. And I say journalism and government because all of this has to do with Chris Cuomo's efforts to help the governor of New York, who happened to be his brother. And you think about how fast things turned over the course of a year. Over the course of a year, Chris Cuomo was strutting this time a year ago because Donald Trump would not be the president any longer. Joe Biden was elected president. He was strutting about that. His brother was the governor of New York, who had written a best-selling book he got a $5 million advance for on how to stop and, well, how to deal with and arrest COVID. Also won an Emmy Award for that book. And now they're both gone. They're both gone, not by their own choice. Not by their own choice. The Chris Cuomo thing, people say, well, what is it he did exactly? Because when the first news came that his brother was being charged by others with sexual harassment, when the news of Governor Cuomo's sexual assaults was being alleged, he said, obviously, my brother's in the news, and for journalistic and rational reasons, I'm not going to be addressing it. That was after he had had his brother on 12 times, 12 times promoting his brother. That in and of itself, before the allegations were known about Andrew Cuomo, or became public, I should say, that in and of itself had some journalists, ethics professors scratching their heads just a little bit. You have a very controversial governor. I guess any governor can be considered controversial, but Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York at the time, he was controversial, taking a lot of shots at the Republicans. He was being deemed the groomed next nominee for the Democratic Party on the assumption that Joe Biden either wouldn't be elected or wouldn't serve more than one term. He was, I think, by most accounts, considered the next Democratic nominee for president. And on, you know, CNN, which considers itself and its fans consider to be the network of record, the news network of record, they had his brother interviewing him, getting that interview with him a dozen times. And the mainstream media, by the way, the major media was covering Andrew Cuomo's press conferences. In fact, even in some cases over at MSNBC, cutting away from Donald Trump's, the president's, to cover the governor of New York's. Why? Why? It's because the media has two problems. They're left wing and they're based in New York. What's important to New York in the media is important to the rest of the world, or more important to the rest of the world than what the president says, especially if that president happens to be a Republican. But what then took place next, and none of us knew, was that Chris Cuomo at CNN was using his journalistic, not just expertise, but connections, his power as a journalist, to get information to his brother and his staff to help save his skin, to help defend himself against these allegations of sexual harassment. You have a journalist exercising his journalistic connections and perch and prominence and fame to aid in the defense of his brother. None of us were privy of that, to that. None of us were privy to that. When that became known, he apologized publicly because a lot of staffers at CNN had some trouble with that. You can imagine, especially in the era of Me Too. You can imagine, especially in the era of Matt Lauer and all that went with the Me Too movement. But he was allowed to keep his job until just a day or two ago when it was revealed that he was concealing yet how extensive his interferences on behalf of his brother were. These are all no-nos. These are all breaches of ethics, all of them. What happened by not stopping it with the first one, the first interview of his brother before any of this came, is that he thought, because you didn't enforce the ethics then, he thought he was just fine. This was all cute. Who didn't love the Cuomos? He thought it was okay. So he did more. And then he did more. And then we did more. And then he got slapped on the wrist, but no more than a slap on the wrist. So he felt it was okay to continue on until all of this was revealed to our, I think, mostly unanimous revulsion. The problem is this. The problem is this. Chris Cuomo wasn't operating in a vacuum. And now there's a story over at the Washington Examiner that Katie Couric of MSNBC may have a problem in trying to help out the Cuomos in the sexual abuse scandal that Governor Cuomo was going through at the time. Governor Andrew Cuomo was going through at the time. The story is about Katie Tour over at MSNBC literally saying on air live, verbatim, that which pro-Cuomo Democratic strategist Liz Smith was texting her. Literally, Katie Tour is saying exactly what she is being texted as news, as objective, from an ally strategist of Governor Cuomo's. Katie Tour is at MSNBC. Her husband is at CBS. Her husband is Tony DeCoppel. I have a feeling that there's going to be more heads rolling than just Chris Cuomo's. You break one rule, you end up breaking them all, the old saying goes. And it looks like Chris Cuomo did that. It also looks like so did those allies of his. We'll be right back. Well, this is interesting. I'm going to have to summon my producer pro tem on this. I see we're now putting up the Christmas tree here. Does that mean, Chris, that we have to start using holiday music, Christmas music in our bumpers now? When does that happen? I've noticed some other other hosts on this station have been already doing it. I noticed it on Gallagher's show. I noticed it on Prager's show. It's a little early. Yeah, but pre-Halloween. Two holidays early. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. You could be. Let's err on the side that you're not, because you're usually not, and let's decide to start it, to commence it Monday. Yeah. Right? Second week of December. Well, it would be the intro music. Yes. Yes. It will be the bumper, top of the hour intro. It will be the Little Drummer Boy, and it will be Casey and the Sunshine Band's version, or possibly, the Silver Bullet Band. Yeah, there's some mystery. And in that we have 3 hours, we might rotate them a little. Yeah. Yeah. That's a possibility. It's a possibility. Yeah. January.
Sorry, I wasn't on air. I just realized I wasn't on air for everybody. I
said, you weren't on air.
I was talking to you. When
okay.
does it become sicko
That's an
season?
Interesting experiment if people could discern what the conversation.
I just realized that as I was looking. No one could hear me on air.
Okay.
You're just hearing dead air.
Glad you're producing the show today.
Yep. Good job. Good job, Pro Tem. When, as you asked, when is the start of it?
Yeah.
When is the official sick of it season?
Oh, I think we give it through the new year.
Oh, I think give it through the 15th of December, I think.
15th of before Christmas?
How many weeks do you get but of the music?
Yeah, it takes us through Christmas and the Christmas season.
All right.
Of course.
All right.
And the 12 nights and all that.
Yeah, I think after 12 days, it's like, let's go. We're good.
My, oh my, I have a movie for you to watch. Based on a book by Dr. Seuss.
I can't imagine which one it is.
I know what I'm getting you for Christmas. A book you have obviously never read.
As long as it's not a CD.
I'm Seth Leifson, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back.